The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
All right. Welcome to a Tuesday, everybody. And we got a busy, exciting show on tap. So last Monday, we spoke with Nikki Fried, who is running for governor of the state of Florida as a Democrat. And today we are speaking with Charlie Crist. In fact, he's with us now. I'm pleased to welcome the man who was the 44th governor of Florida, right? 44th, wasn't it?
That's Governor Crist.
Now congressman representing Florida's 13th congressional district, who's running for governor again. Congressman, governor, what do I call you?
Charlie. Just call me Charlie.
Okay, Charlie. Well, welcome to the show. You don't remember, though we have met before. When I first moved back to Florida back in 2004, I believe you were attorney general and running for governor at the time, and then you became governor. At the time, I worked for a little while at WFTL and then with Jim Defeati over at WINZ when South Florida still had a progressive talk station.
Yeah, right. That's true.
Yeah.
And that's wonderful.
Right. And then, so it's been a while. I've watched.
We got some history. That's a good thing.
We do have some history. So I was not born here. I was born in New York, but my family moved down here when I was 11. So I went to, you know, middle school, high school, and college, all in Florida. Graduated from USF in your neck of the woods.
Yes.
And so, you know, I'm pretty dug into Florida politics. As much as one can be. And so we've watched the changes. Now, it's funny. When I used to work with Jim Defeati, he called you, and he didn't mean this in any bad way, but the best Democratic governor that Florida's had in a while. And, of course, you were a Republican at the time.
You know, I got to tell you the truth, Nicole. I've had many friends say to me when I was still a Republican, Charlie, you're a Democrat. You just don't know it. Hmm. And I know it. And I'm very happy being a Florida Democrat. Really am.
Well, but let's start with that. You were a Republican. You worked your way up. I think you were Secretary of Education, then became Attorney General, then became Governor, now Member of Congress. Through your governor term, you were a Republican. Why were you a Republican? What was it about the Republican Party that made you identify with them?
You know, I was a Republican because mom and dad were. It's the same reason I'm a Methodist, because mom and dad are. And, you know, that's the way it was for a while. And then, you know, when I got elected governor, that was 2006. And toward the end of that term, 2009, 2010, was the rise of the Tea Party in the Republican Party, started moving harder and harder to the right. And I developed a good working relationship with then President Barack Obama, obviously a Democrat. And I was still a Republican at the time. And I can remember him wanting to come to Florida, Nicole. It's a short story, I promise.
Oh, it's okay.
He was coming to Fort Myers in like February of 2009, in the middle of the Great Recession. And so we get a call in my office in Tallahassee inviting me to go to be with the president. And so some staff members came into my office. They shared that information with me. And I said, yeah, that'd be great. And then they said to me, Governor, are you sure? And I said, yeah, why do you ask? They said, well, you know, he's a Democrat. I said, he's the president of the United States of America.
Uh-huh.
He's coming here to help Florida and our country get out of this economic tailspin that we're in. And please let the White House know that I will be there. And so I go, and we're at the Fort Myers Convention Center downtown, right on the river. And I'm downstairs in the area where his car drove in, like a garage type area, the big black Cadillac, right? He's in the back seat. He motions to me when the car stops to come back to him. So I do. He opens the door. He moves over to the other side of the back of the car and says, please have a seat for a minute, Charlie. I want to, you know, tell you a few things. I said, okay. And he says, you know, a couple of things. Number one, thank you for being here today. I really appreciate it. And I said, I'm honored to be here. He goes, you are going to take a lot of grief for having been here today. I said, well, I don't know about that. He goes, trust me, you will. But he said, since you are here, he said, would you mind introducing me today? And I said, no, that would be an honor as well. I'd be more than happy to do it. So he said, well, you know, we'll go in there. It's going to be loud. Be ready. These are my people. Go go up to the podium, just say whatever is on your heart and your mind about me, about the Recovery Act, the stimulus, as it's known as. I'll come up and I'll say my thing and that'll be it. Is that all right? I said, you're the commander in chief. That's fine. So I go up to the podium and I gave what I thought was a proper introduction for our president and concluded by saying, please give a warm Florida welcome to President Barack Obama. He comes up to the lectern. Mm-hmm. He shakes my hand.
Yes.
Then he hugs me.
Yeah. And in fact, here's the picture. There's,
you know, well, you have the photo.
There's the hug.
That is the hug. And, you know, like I say, somebody took a picture of it. And that was kind of it for me as a Republican office holder. And I'll tell you something I think is pretty interesting. I don't think it was just because I was willing to work with a Democratic president. I was also working with the first Black president.
Oh, yes.
And it saddens me to say that. And I don't want to paint too broad a brush here, Nicole. I mean, there's a lot of good Republicans, believe me. But there is that element within the party. And it broke my heart. And that's when I decided I'm out of here. This is not how I was raised. My mom and dad raised me and my three sisters to respect all people, regardless of where they're from or what they look like or what their background is. And so that kind of was the beginning of becoming then an independent and then ultimately a Democrat.
Well, that photograph, I pulled it for good reason, because that is the moment that those political watchers said that's the moment that your career as a Republican politician ended, because you embraced the first Black Democratic president, and you were
Republican. Exactly.
And when you look at the difference between the Republican Party of 2008, 2009, and today, is there any similarity? Do you see any common ground there?
No, very little, Nicole. In fact, the way I express it is I think the party since then has metastasized. And it's just gotten worse. I mean, look at it under Donald Trump and what we experienced the last 4 years of his presidency, frankly, and where it is now, where the big lie is something that people in the party have to tout, at least if they're office holders, and they have to say that this is what reality is when it clearly is not. I mean, it's sad. It really is sad.
Now, when you were governor, I got to say, although, you know, you were a Republican, I wasn't your biggest supporter, you did something. You stood up for the teachers, and that won a lot of people over. I know my sister's a teacher, and she's like, I have to vote for him. He stood up for us. So when you see what Ron DeSantis is doing now with, you know, docking the pay of administrators who might try to enforce a mask mandate, try to protect our kids. And now, I mean, it just goes on and on.
It's appalling. It's appalling. And it's beyond the pale. I can't even believe we're watching this and experiencing it. And what else that I think is weird about it? I mean, this is a fellow who went to Harvard and Yale. And so you would assume, you know, would have a certain level of intellect.
You would think.
And yet, you know, these policies of not listening to science, not listening to physicians, not adhering to what healthcare professionals are telling us is the right thing to do in order to keep our children safe in school and our teachers safe in the same classroom. It's remarkable to me. And the only way I can explain it, and I'm not even sure it does, is that I think he is so laser focused on trying to get the Republican nomination for president 2024 that he's completely forgotten about Florida. He is playing and pandering to one base, and it's the hard right conservative wacko base, if you will, of today's Republican Party. And it defies logic. It doesn't make sense. And it's killing people in our state. And I'll give you one example, not a death, but a bad situation. And it's personal. So I live in St. Petersburg, near where USF is, as you know. And my niece goes to school. She's 5 years old. She's in elementary school. They started a couple weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And in Pinellas County, there's no mask mandate. So what happens? She gets COVID.
Then
she brings it home.
Oh, God.
She's 5 years old, right? So her younger sister, my two-month-old niece, gets COVID this last week. I mean, that's what's happening all over Florida because of bad leadership, because of leadership by the governor that is not listening to science. And, you know, my dad's a physician. You talked about your sister being a teacher. I stood up for teachers. Two of my three sisters were public school teachers. So I'm a public school kid. You know, I went to St. Petersburg High School. I went to elementary school. They're all public school the whole way through and graduated Florida State University. So, you know, that's where my heart is. That's where my passion is. And I want to fight for teachers. And of course, I always will. And I want to fight for the environment and things that are being neglected. Women's rights, my God, they're under assault now, too. Voters' rights, civil rights. I mean, it goes on and on and on. It's unbelievable.
Right. Well, we've got a lot of problems here in Florida. So, Charlie, let's talk about some of them. You mentioned women's rights. Let's just start there, because under DeSantis, they've introduced legislation in Florida. I don't know how, because they're not in session now, but they've introduced a bill to basically do the same thing that they did in Texas, a heartbeat bill, which is a misnomer because it's not a heartbeat. It's six weeks. It's a electrical impulse or something. But in Florida, really?
I know. It's horrible. It's horrible. And, you know, I told you I was raised with three sisters. And so my respect for women was in my DNA as a kid. And, you know, the notion that these men in Tallahassee are going to tell women what to do with their body is appalling to me. You know, we're all children of God. And I think that we all deserve mutual respect, literal respect. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is that a woman should be able to make her own decision about her own body at any time. You know, maybe consulting with her physician or her family, what have you, but not her government. And the DeSantis is going after that now. He went after voters' rights earlier, signing a bill last spring that said it's going to be harder to do mail-in ballots than it was before. Shoot, my 89-year-old father, my 86-year-old mother, love to utilize mail-in ballots. It's convenient.
I use mail-in ballots.
I love it too. It's great. And particularly during a pandemic, it was smart that we had that. Now they're going to make it harder. And the irony is that the governor said after the last election last November, what a great election it was. And so then they go to work in the legislative session trying to fix a problem we don't even have.
Exactly.
Why? To suppress the vote, to make it harder for Democrats to get out and vote. Not only the mail-in ballot, making it more difficult, but drop boxes in minority communities throughout the state of Florida. I mean, it's discrimination. It's appalling what they're doing. And I hope that that will get thrown out in court.
Right. And I think I remember, and please correct me if I'm wrong. This is a memory that is something good that you did. I think you extended early voting hours, if I'm not mistaken, in Florida to accommodate people who wanted to vote. That's something that the Republican Party just does not do. They err on the side of not letting you vote, trying to keep people from voting because, oh my God, somebody who's not supposed to vote might get through. Of course, I don't believe that's their real reason, but to suppress the vote. You extended voting hours.
I did. And you know, it's interesting, short story again. That was 2008, Barack Obama's first election.
Right.
So he's running against John McCain. And the close of the election with early voting going on, huge lines across the state of Florida, people trying to vote, a lot of them seniors. And, you know, it's Florida. So in late October, it's still hot.
Oh, yeah.
And so I get a call from Dan Gelber, now mayor of Miami Beach, who was then a state senator. Mm-hmm. And he calls me up and he says, Governor, you know, you got to do something about this. I'm sure you can watch in Tallahassee on the news and see these long lines we're suffering from in South Florida. These people need to be able to vote. And I said, well, Dan, what do you think I can do? He goes, you could sign an executive order if you're willing to extend the hours of early voting. And I said, I don't know, do I have the authority to do that? And I asked my general counsel, I said, do I have the authority to do that as governor unilaterally? And the general counsel to the governor told me, I don't think you do, because it has to be an emergency situation to sign an executive order like that. And I said, well, I'm a lawyer too. In fact, I used to be attorney general. Let's talk about this for a minute. We're talking about people not being able to vote in a democracy in a presidential election.
That's an emergency.
Vote, right. That sounds like, thank you, an emergency. So I said, please go draft it. I'm going to sign it. And within hours after that, we had longer hours for people to be able to vote in Florida. Yeah. I mean, welcome people to vote. Encourage democracy. They're trying to suppress democracy and hurt the vote. And that's just wrong.
Do you still talk to some of your old Republican allies and coworkers and colleagues? And did how do they feel about the change in that party?
Not good. I mean, you know, listen, there are moderate Republicans that are alive and well. And, you know, those people I still keep in communication with, and they're frustrated by what they see. They're frustrated by this governor in particular, and sort of the iron fist with which he is ruling our state. I mean, telling local governments that they can't issue mask mandates. You know, it used to be in the Republican Party that they would say the government closest to the people governs best. Well, he's doing exactly the opposite. Right. Then. But he's following the model of Donald Trump. He's like mini-me.
Right. But that's the thing. Okay, so that's Ron DeSantis, and he's god-awful. I mean, we can all agree on that. My nickname for him is Moron Death Sentence because, well, it's...
Well,
it's
I got another one for you. If you haven't heard this yet, I call him Wrong DeSantis.
Oh, Wrong DeSantis. That's good.
W in front of the R.
Yep.
And a G after the N in Ron,
right?
And it's Wrong DeSantis because he's wrong on women's choice. He's wrong on civil rights. He's wrong on voters' rights. He's wrong on education. And he's certainly dead wrong on COVID.
Right. Well, that works. But I want to go back a little further. Now, sure. You were governor. Your term ended in 2010, right?
Right.
That's when you decided you were going to run for the Senate.
Right.
And we wound up with Rick Scott as governor. Now, as bad as Ron DeSantis is, Rick Scott, Voldemort was my nickname for him. And because it fits, it just, you know, physically it works.
Yeah.
Do you regret that now, not staying in the governor's office, which probably would have been a safe bet for reelection, I would think, unless the Obama hug was so detrimental.
I'm asked that a fair amount. And no, I don't regret it because the rationale behind doing it for me was pretty simple. As we stated earlier and talked about, that was right when the Great Recession was hitting Florida and the country. And most of the money that was coming to the rescue to help us, I referenced the Recovery Act.
Yep.
That was $12 billion to Florida. That came from the federal government. That came from the U.S. Senate and the House of Representatives. And I knew that if we're going to get more help, that's where it was going to have to come from, because that's where they print the money, not in Tallahassee, in Washington. So, no, I don't regret trying to do that. I wanted to do it to help my Florida.
But then we wound up with Rick Scott, who blew my mind that he was elected. But the most unsympathetic, unattractive character. I'm not talking physical here. I'm talking about everything about him, his persona. Everything was just so standoffish. And why the people voted for him, I don't understand. And then we got Marco Rubio in the Senate. We got hit from both sides, a double whammy, and it to the detriment of this state over the last decade. Would you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. No question about it. That certainly is a fact. And now we have Ron DeSantis.
Yeah.
And so I think hard as I thought this would be, it's even gotten worse.
Yes.
You know, he is worse. There's no question. And that's why I'm running for governor, because it breaks my heart to see what's happened to our Florida. I know Florida's people are good, decent, hardworking people, like the many teachers that we talked about earlier, firefighters, law enforcement officers. You know, there's a lot of good people in the Sunshine State, and they deserve better. And that's why I'm running for governor, to give them a choice, to give them an option, because what we have now is he doesn't have their back.
Right.
He doesn't have my 2-month-old niece's back, let alone, you know, people that work for the state. And they're not being informed about people in those agencies that might be testing positive for COVID.
Right. Or kids that go to school. There's no he made it so that if a kid is exposed, they don't even have to tell that child's parents that your child was exposed to COVID, to give them the chance to pull the kid out of school or whatever. It's just it's reprehensible.
It's unbelievable.
So let's talk about healthcare for a moment, though,
sure,
because,
sure.
OK, so obviously Rick Scott was in office during the whole Obamacare fight. And when the Affordable Care Act was passed, it became law, turned down the Medicaid expansion, did not participate. You know, thankfully, we do have it's the only reason I'm alive is access to the Affordable Care Act, because I'm a lung cancer survivor. And as an independent radio host, I was unable to buy insurance on the open market. So there's that.
God bless you for that. Yes.
So, you know, it's far from perfect. I would like to see Medicare for all. I'm curious as to where you are on Medicare for all or some kind of a public option going forward.
I support a public option, much in the same way President Biden does. And I think it's important to give more healthcare coverage to more people. No question in my mind. And we're the richest country in the world, Nicole.
I know.
Not only that, we're the richest country in the history of the world.
Yep.
So if we can't give health care to more folks, I don't know who can. We can and we should. And now you touched on Medicaid expansion.
Yes.
It's unconscionable to me that 800,000 to 1 million of our fellow Floridians aren't going to have health care again tomorrow because wrong DeSantis says no. He's wrong on that, too. And I remember opening up one of my campaign offices in Miami-Dade County in a prior campaign and election. And there was a young man there. There was a big turnout. This is all pre-COVID, of course. Nice turnout there. And a young man in a wheelchair was there, probably in his early 30s. And so I'm drawn to people, and I was drawn to him, got on my knee because I didn't want him to have to look up like little kids do if you don't kind of get down and get level with them. And I asked him, I said, "Now, I noticed you're here. I'm honored that you came, but I'm curious, why are you here today for our campaign office opening here in Miami-Dade?" And he said, "One reason. I know you believe in expanding Medicaid, and I don't have health care.
Oh, God.
And if you win, I will get Medicaid." It's that important to people. And sometimes people who don't have empathy or compassion don't have that chip. They just don't get it. But I do have that chip, and in abundance, I hope, and I believe I do. I care about people, and I want them to have good lives and a good quality of life and good health care during their life and not have it be so expensive that they go bankrupt or whatever. This is what we need in a leader, in my humble opinion. We need somebody who truly cares about people, men, women, children, black, white, gay, straight, you know, short, tall. You know, we're all, as I said earlier, children of God, and we deserve to have good lives and people who are in positions of authority that give a damn about us.
I want to ask about marijuana. We live in the Sunshine State. Cannabis, you know, there's a reason it's called weed because it grows like weeds. We could grow it here. We could fill our coffers. It could be great for the economy. Now, I know that you worked for John Morgan when you were in between elected gigs. John Morgan was the attorney who basically spearheaded the medical marijuana campaign to get it legal here in Florida. Sunk a lot of time and money into it. Where are you on the issue of recreational marijuana?
Oh, I think we should legalize it. We should have done it yesterday. And then we'd be able to tax it, as you pointed out. Mm-hmm. Talk about a revenue source for it. It would be incredible. We could use it to help pay our teachers more and not just give them bonus checks that bounce. I mean, you know, you can't make up this stuff, but that's what's going on. Plus, it's personal. I mentioned to you, I had three sisters. I have two now. My older sister passed. She got a brain tumor died from it. Mm-hmm. And I had to watch her have to deal with pain from that experience without having even medical marijuana at the time. And so it seems to me it's just the right thing to do. Frankly, I think it's probably a lot less harmful than alcohol.
Oh, yeah. For a lot of people. I fully agree. I'm not a drinker, but I smoke.
What it would do to help us in terms of the revenue addition to Florida, that could help us, as I said, with education and, you know, firefighters, you know, helping people that work in.
Oh, and every front, you know, environmental issues. We've got the Everglades that, you know, are in trouble. We know that Rick Scott, I'm going to wanted to drill in the Everglades. I hope that's a dead deal. Offshore, they're talking about, again, offshore drilling off the coast of Florida. There are all these kind of things. Where are you on protecting the pristine environment here?
I think I've been a huge champion for it. I know I have. In fact, I held the first climate change summit in the history of Florida as governor.
Right.
Did it with Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger.
That's right.
And
I remember
others.
That.
And it was the right thing to do because, you know, focusing, you know, we are a state that is so susceptible to climate change, probably the most susceptible to rising sea levels since we're almost an island being a peninsula. And so I think it's vitally important. And Nicole, as I've always felt, I think that the environment and the economy in our state are inextricably linked together because our largest industry is tourism. Why? Because people like to come to Florida. Why do they want to do that? Because she's beautiful. And so we have a duty in order to protect our economy, to protect our environment, because they do go hand in hand. And so I'm passionate about it. I wasn't born in Florida either. I was born in Pennsylvania, mm-hmm. but my family moved to St. Pete when I was 3 years old. Wow. And I love this state. I love our people. And we've got to look out for our environment for their benefit and generations after us.
We do. And you know, I feel bad. In recent years, I've taken to calling it Florida, because that's what we've become. This is a state that the rest of the country and the world, frankly, jokes about. Florida man. The stupidity, and I always tell people it's the humidity, not the heat. But seriously, I think it's it comes from the top down. In this case, we've had now, we're going on 12 years. We had Rick Scott for 8, and now Ron DeSantis. It's like, oh my God, please, a return to normalcy.
Sanity.
Right, sanity.
Well, we can do it. We can do it. And you know, I'll give you an analogy. And people have suggested this to me, that my race may be similar to Joe Biden's race against Donald Trump. In Biden, we had a very seasoned, very experienced, very steady hand, somebody that people knew and had trust and confidence in. In his opponent, President Trump at the time, we had a rookie president. And he acted like it every single day.
Embarrassing.
In this race, yes. If I get the nomination, experienced, done the job itself before, mm-hmm. been attorney general of the state, commissioner of education for our public school system, and a state senator. On the other hand, we've got Ron DeSantis, a rookie governor who acts like it or worse every single day.
Right. And he's emulating Trump, which is the worst thing possible. He's mean. He's a bully. He's nasty to everybody who doesn't agree with him. And now I heard that he's talking about if you're a Florida state government employee and you criticize him, that you need to watch out because you'll either be fired or, I don't know, worse.
I know. It's unbelievable. It's come to that. I mean, he's a bully.
He's a bully.
That's all it is.
And it's wrong. Charlie Crist, I need to go here just because you're here, and I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you. Obviously, over the years, your ideas and positions change. That's normal. Everybody goes through changes. Your website, which is charliecrist.com, does not have your positions on different issues. This is a problem I have with a lot of candidates. And what I've noticed is the real progressive ones put it all out there. You can go to their website and you can see where they are in education, on healthcare, on taxes, on infrastructure, you name it, it's there. It's not on your website, but it's not on Nikki Fried's either. Why don't you put it out there? Why isn't
it on there? That's a great criticism, and I appreciate it very much, and I'll fix it.
Okay. Here's the delicate part.
Sure.
On LGBTQ issues. Yes. Over the years, your position has varied, I will say that. Back in the day when you were governor, you were against, I believe, same-sex marriage. You were certainly against gay couples adopting. You were just not good on issues for the LGBTQ community. In conjunction with that are the rumors. Now, it's what anybody does in the privacy of their home or with their personal relationships is their own business. The knock on you has been that there are these rumors floating around, have been for better part of a decade or more, that you're a closeted gay man, and that's not the issue. The issue has been your that not being good on issues for the gay community.
Well, I'm not, number one, which is fine. But what it's important, I think, is I've evolved on the issue the same way President Obama has. Hmm. And I can remember him saying that, you know, he was supportive of gay couples not being able to be married, but to cohabitate, to be together. And then he came around during his presidency, right after Vice President Biden at the time. I think he sort of jumped the gun
on
him.
Yes, he did.
But I remember the president was so eloquent in this interview with a British journalist, if I recall correctly. And he said, I have come to the view, this is President Obama, and I'm paraphrasing, obviously, that, you know, who am I to judge? And who am I to tell other people who to love? And so for that reason, he said, I do support gay marriage, and I will from now going forward. And I feel the same way and did it at about the same time. So, you know, people grow up, they get wiser. They have greater compassion and greater understanding. And, you know, there's somebody that is to judge. It's not me. It's not you. It's somebody else. And I think the right thing to do is to honor all people. As I said earlier, doesn't matter if they're gay or straight, black or white, short or tall.
Believer or atheist.
That's right.
Let me throw that out there, because you made a few references to God, and I'm actually one of those people who's not. I don't have organized religion in my life, and I believe in the power of the universe, but I don't believe in a God. So, you know, these are the things. I think that there needs to be greater separation between church and state. And so your references to God all the time, I love that that's your, you know, belief and your conviction, but just know that not everybody in Florida has those beliefs.
Which is very fair, and you are right.
Charlie Crist, I've really enjoyed this conversation. I'm impressed. You've answered every question I've asked you and thrown at you, and I wish you the best. So what happened?
Let me ask you this.
One more question. Annette Tadeo, who was your running mate back when, the last time you ran for governor, I've heard through the grapevine that she's getting ready to throw her hat in the ring as well. Have you heard that?
I've heard the speculation. And let me say this. Anybody who wants to run should. It's a free country, you know, yet still
right now.
So anybody who wants to do that should do that. We need more good leaders now more than ever.
Uh-huh. Okay. And I'm sorry, I cut you off. I just wanted to get that out there about Annette Tadeo.
I think what you were saying was perfect. You know, I've enjoyed interviewing with you, and I was just going to tell you, I'm never going to shy away from answering questions. I think it's so important. If you're asking the people to put their trust in you and to give you their vote, which is precious, as John Lewis, my former colleague, used to always tell us, then the least you can do is be transparent and be honest and be forthright. And I always strive to do that. I'm not perfect, but, you know, you got to do the best that you can. And I know for the future of Florida, we need somebody who is a decent person, who cares about people, who will shoot you straight and tell you the truth.
That should be the bottom line. If you don't mind, because you're still a sitting congressman, let me ask you, with what's going on there right now, the fights between, there was a deal cut, as far as I understood, between between the leaders.
Princes and the moderates, basically, I think is what you're alluding to.
Yes, the BIF, or the hard infrastructure bill, and the larger, you know, Build Back Better bill. They need better names for these things.
Right.
And the progressives, right now, there's a bit of a standoff. Nancy Pelosi today backed off on the deal that they made and said, we're going to not do one without the other. They're married. They're joined together. Today, she said, well, we're going to go forward and have a vote on the BIF on Thursday and let the chips fall where they may, as far as I can tell. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, you must be clairvoyant. I was just asked this question on CNN about 45 minutes ago. How I feel about it, I think we need to do both. I don't care if they're together or separate. I just know that both of them need to be done. We need the hard infrastructure bill, for lack of a better term, if you will, for roads, for bridges, for ports, and the things that we all know throughout America, certainly in Florida, need to be improved. Maybe get us a little high-speed rail, which we almost had before.
Almost.
But we also need the $3.5 trillion as well, in my view. And as it relates to Florida, where that could be enormously helpful is something you mentioned earlier, Everglades restoration. We could get $5 billion for Everglades restoration if we get that $3.5 trillion. So both of these are important to the Sunshine State. Both are important to America. I don't care if they're wedded, if they're apart, as long as both pass, because that's what the country needs.
And so you're on the record, no matter what order they come in, when you're a yes vote on both of them.
Absolutely. 100%. Yeah. The country needs it.
We do.
We're still in the middle of this pandemic. People are still hurting. Some people don't have the empathy to realize it, but it is happening and it's real. And so, yeah, I'm willing to invest in America anytime, any day, anywhere.
Awesome. Charlie Crist, thank you so much. I hope we can do this again. I really appreciate your time.
And your answers. Great, man. Oh. You're wonderful. You do a great job. God bless you.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate it. You take care.
Universe bless you. Let me do it that way.
Thank you so much. You too. Bye-bye. There you go. Charlie Crist. What a treat that was. I'm very pleasantly surprised. Maybe because I know his background, I expected it to be a little more contentious. And you know me. I can be a bit short and a bit... Not very political sometimes. I asked him everything I wanted to ask him. So now it's your turn. What did you think? All right. Last Monday, we heard from Nikki Fried, Hopefully you heard that. If you didn't, you can always go to NicoleSandler.com/9-23-21 because it was on September 23rd, last Monday. That's how I post all the shows on my website. So you can find any show from any date just by using that format. So we had Nikki Fried last week and we had Charlie Crist today. What do you think, David? What did you think? What? You can't hear you. You got to come in here because I can't hear you. Yes?
I think the word you might have been searching for as to how you can be
bitchy
might be bitchy, yes.
Bitchy. I got it. I can be bitchy.
Charlie said you were clairvoyant.
Yes. but he paid me a very nice compliment, too. He liked my interview, maybe because I wasn't bitchy.
No, you did a great job, as you always do, and I agree with you. I was very pleasantly surprised. I met him once.
Yeah?
I was flying in 2004. I represented the Cubs' first draft choice, who's from Dunedin.
Okay.
And I flew to Tampa for the announcement of his signing. And Charlie was on my flight coming back down here. And we just happened to be sitting next to each other while we were waiting for the plane to take off. He was a very nice guy. I observed his administration and his public service since then. I wasn't tremendously impressed, but there are obviously many worse. But, you know, as far as today was concerned, I think he knocked it out of the park, to use another sports.
Yeah. No, I'm pleasantly surprised. So I would love to hear from you. 954-889-6410. If you're on Skype, you can Skype to Nicole Sandler, all one word. Especially people in Florida. What do you think? You know, again, I have this built-in bias against someone who was a Republican for all those years. But again, when he was a Republican, he was one of the better of, you know, as my then colleague Jim DeFede used to joke, he's the best Democratic governor we've had in a long time when he was a Republican. All right, let's go to the phones. It's Roger in Minneapolis calling. Hey, Roger, what'd you think?
Well, I remember when Crist was governor of Florida, and I didn't agree with quite a bit of what he did at the time. It's real hard for me to believe that Republicans are capable of reforming themselves. I think Crist is one of the most clear examples of somebody who actually has done so. And he does clearly seem like a genuinely nice person. And I'm afraid that I see that as a problem. To get bullies like the current governor banished, it's going to take some very tough language and talk and urgency. And I think Crist is just too damn nice. I don't think he's able to wield the club that he needs.
Oh, I think he is, though, because I remember I lived here when he was governor last time. He can be, you know, he can be a hard ass. I think with age comes wisdom. I know it's true in my case. Back then, I was, you know, a little more hot-headed, maybe a little bitchier. I probably would have been more confrontational with him in an interview, and I wouldn't have approached it the way I did. I don't know. I'm honestly, coming into this, I was not expecting to feel this way now. Again, I was impressed by Nikki Fried. I thought she was very good. My concern about her, frankly, is that she's not experienced. And I guess, you know, he knows his way around. Anyway, Roger, I'm going to run because I got other people calling and I got a call from down here that I do want to take to get in a Floridian. But thanks for calling from Minneapolis.
I'm curious, Nicole, if David agrees with me at all.
He's not in here anymore, but I'll find out.
Okay. All right.
he went back to his workout. All right. Bye-bye. From the 954 area code. Hi, who's this?
Hi, this is David in North Miami Beach.
Hey, David, I know who this is. Yep, I'm sure. Right. You back in the day, back when I was working at WINZ, you made me up like multiplication tables for Allison, didn't you?
That I did. I invented that on like Valentine's Day of '06.
Yep. Yeah. I remember. I remember. Oh, hold on one second. David's here to answer Roger's question.
Number one, I'm not working out. I'm working. number two, I definitely do agree with Nicole that I think Charlie can, without a doubt, handle anything that they might throw at him. And again, whether it's Charlie or Nikki Fried or Annette Tadeo or a fucking mannequin, it would be a light years better improvement than the fuck face we have now.
Okay. There you go. The words of wisdom from my husband. Yeah. So, okay. Well, and the, you know, that's how we talk around here. So, yeah.
All right. So, I'm from like a Quinn Garrison Keillor. Sometimes age comes alone without wisdom.
Yeah.
But my big concern, what I can guarantee will not be in any debate, the average money per student in Florida is about half that of, say, Connecticut.
Right.
And this despite you know, the lottery and, well, and again, with Charlie Crist will never be asked, why did you allow blackjack Seminole money to go to the general fund instead of the education fund?
Hmm. Okay, I don't know anything. I don't know anything about that.
And I say this as someone who's wasted a dozen years as a substitute teacher, because you have places like Broward Schools that does not acknowledge substitute teaching as experience. So instead of getting local talent, they keep importing from New York, New Jersey, New Orleans, London, and so it's very frustrating to have 8 teaching certificates. And losing the people who went to the right yeshiva or church now that we have all these charter schools. So this is my perspective. He's a good man. Unfortunately, the Tea Party proved they don't want good men.
No. Well, the Republican Party went off a cliff. They jumped the shark, to mix metaphors. But, you know, so,
exactly.
You know, they're just, they're out there. We need to put the adults back in charge, frankly. And so, as David just said, whether it's Charlie Crist or Nikki Fried or Annette Tadeo, whatever, we'll be better off. Now, somebody in the chat room just asked, can a woman win in Florida? We know a black man can't. Well, we had in the last gubernatorial election, oh God, and now I'm drawing a blank on his name, Andrew...
Andrew Gillum,
who seemed great. I mean, I was a big supporter. I thought we're going to get not only, you know, a black man, but a progressive. This is, and he came close. And then after he lost, he had a real meltdown. So, you know, you don't know with people. I'll tell you, that's one thing about Crist is at least
Andrew,
we know what we're going to get. What's that? I'm sorry.
A lot of situations where you had two of a kind of, you know, a couple of rich guys running, a couple of women running. And so, and because we don't have second choice voting,
right,
they canceled out one another.
That's right.
Leaving Andrew Gillum to come through, and good man, but maybe not a match for what was coming. It's, because what was his real opponent? Fox News.
Yes.
Our governor now was, you know, living in his office and as a congressman, not that unusual, but using Fox News, able to narrow cast.
And he still does. He still does. He will not give an interview. Look, last week when I had Nikki Fried on, then Jim DeFede came on, who is probably Florida's greatest political journalist, right? I don't think anyone's going to argue with me on that. And even he can't get Ron DeSantis to sit down with him for an interview right now. So that tells you a whole lot. Yet DeSantis will go on Fox 4 or 5 times a week.
DeFede was able to get an interview with someone who was trying to get that crazy amendment one that would tax people for having solar panels, but
right. Well, DeFede talks,
I mean,
to everybody.
Can do anything, but we can't get the governor. That's
right.
Crazy.
Right? That is crazy. Yep.
I'll let the next caller.
All right.
Thank you,
David. All right. So yeah, I'm taking your calls. 954-889-6410. If you're on Skype, you can Skype in to Nicole Sandler. In the meantime, you know, the rest of the show is up to us. I've got a couple of things. Putting aside what's going on in with the fighting between, and I hate to say the progressives and the moderates, because I, you know me, I don't ascribe to the moderate label. I do want to tell you, though, tomorrow I'm going to be speaking with Zach Carter, Zachary D. Carter, who wrote for years for Huffington Post. And Huffington Post, in case you didn't know, was recently bought out by BuzzFeed, and they slashed the staff. Now, it sucks that some good people like Zach Carter will let go. But Huffington Post, or now HuffPost, sorry, has gotten better editorial-wise. So their content is better, but they let go of some good people. Anyway, Zach Carter has a book out dealing with the price of peace and economics and all that. And actually, we taped it earlier today. It's going to run tomorrow. It's really good. We get down and dirty in all of this, Biff and infrastructure and the whole sausage factory that's happening in D.C. right now. So we'll talk about that. But today what happened is Nancy Pelosi basically said, screw your stinking deal. We're going to vote on this thing on Thursday. Well, let me share with you what Bernie Sanders just tweeted out. If I can find it here. Okay, so Bernie wrote, let's be crystal clear. If the bipartisan infrastructure bill is passed on its own on Thursday, this will be in violation of an agreement that was reached within the Democratic caucus in Congress. More importantly, it will end all leverage that we have to pass a major reconciliation bill. That means there will be no serious effort to address the long-neglected crises facing the working families of our country, the children, the elderly, the sick, and the poor. It also means that Congress will continue to ignore the existential threat to our country and planet with regard to climate change. I strongly urge my House colleagues to vote against the bipartisan infrastructure bill until Congress passes a strong reconciliation bill. They need to do it together. The only reason they need to do it together is because of the leverage. Leverage! It's what gives. It's the give and take. It's how they work together. And it's the deal they made. And all of a sudden, Nancy Pelosi's saying, yeah, all right, about that deal. Well, maybe not. Look, what Charlie Crist said, I agree with. Again, I can't believe I'm saying these words. But I agree. We need both of them. My worry is that if they pass the smaller one first, we're not going to get the other one. And that would suck. I mean, and that's putting it really basic in basic terms. It would be so much worse than sucking. It would be a disaster because it would mean nothing gets better. We need things to get better. So what will it take to get this through? Well, right now, the stumbling block is Kyrsten Sinema and Joe Manchin. And I understand that both of them were again summoned to the White House today. So I guess Joe Biden is working them. We all need to work them too. We need to work the phones, especially if you live in West Virginia or Arizona. Now, the Arizona Democratic Party said that if Kyrsten Sinema fucks this up, they will give a vote of no confidence for her. So she'll be out of a job. But you know what? She's also holding a fundraiser today with five lobbying groups that are against this reconciliation bill. So I don't know what she's trying to do. She told someone in an interview that she wants to emulate John McCain. So what is she thinks that means bucking your party? That means going against the wishes and interests of your constituents? Because that's not what John McCain did. John McCain decided to go with the side of sanity. John McCain wasn't willing to fuck up, you know, our access to health care, to overturn the Affordable Care Act. That's why he did this. Kyrsten Sinema, in her little Catholic girl's school outfit, goes on the Senate floor and goes like this to a $15 an hour minimum wage. That's not what John McCain did. She's nothing like John McCain. David, yes?
The Arizona, my former home.
Yes.
Democratic Party already passed the resolution to, yes.
Okay. So already had a vote of no confidence for Kyrsten Sinema.
Correct. Yesterday.
Good. Well, good. They need to do it again and again and again and again.
Daily.
Right. Your daily vote to say, screw you, Kyrsten Sinema, with your inappropriate outfits. Now, I know I wear these little tank top. It's actually a dress. I wear dresses every day. It's hot here in Florida. We have air conditioning on. I also have a fan aiming at me because this room with all my equipment gets really hot. This is how I dress in my own home, in my own studio, doing my own radio show on my own platform. If I was in Congress or the United States Senate, I wouldn't go in dressed like this. It's inappropriate. Everything about that woman is inappropriate. And I know some people go, don't comment on her looks. Don't comment on how she dresses. Well, sorry, that's the image she's putting forth. And her little Catholic girl plaid skirt uniform the day she went like this, that's thumbs down for those of you just listening on an audio feed, to a $15 an hour minimum wage. Screw her. Vote her out. Now, you notice I didn't say lock her up. I said vote her out. All right. Well, phone lines are still open, but I do have more to talk to you about. I came across a website this morning. Now, you know, again, I live here in Florida, where our idiot governor has spent a ridiculous amount of money on Regeneron. That's the monoclonal antibody therapy for people who've gotten COVID. And to make matters worse, he sets up these, you know how they used to have the vaccination sites? Well, he sets up treatment sites for the people to get the antibody treatment, and people go there and they're at death's door. And there are people like lying on the floor, moaning in pain because it has to be in a injection or an intravenous drip or something. But he won't go and say, everybody get vaccinated. That is paid for by the federal government. This is costing the taxpayers of Florida on the average of, I think, $2,100 a dose. It's back-ass words. All right, back to the phones. A call from 310, my old stomping grounds in L.A. Who's this?
It's Lynn.
Hey, Lynn.
Can you hear me?
I hear you loud and clear.
Hi. Okay, I read a very interesting article this morning about the $3.5 trillion reconciliation package.
Okay.
A strategy for getting it through.
Yeah.
Cut it in half. So that the, like, Kyrsten Sinemas and the Manchins can say, well, we got it down in
but
money
that means,
wise,
but that means they have to that ha- they have wait, to pass wait, wait, two packages. Yeah.
The brilliant idea is keep everything in place, but just shorten it. So it's instead of a 10-year window, make it like a 4-year window, as long as everything is in place before the next election. And the strategy was just like Obamacare, once it gets in and people start enjoying the benefits, they will not want the politicians to vote it out or reduce it. They will want to renew it. So I think that's a very smart strategy. I wonder what you think about
okay
that.
Well, you know, I can see the lore of it. I don't think it would work. First of all, you know, we need to get the media to reframe how they talk about this. Think about this. The NDAA, the National Defense Authorization Act, that just passed the House, I think, Monday, $740 billion. That's 1 year. Nobody balked at the cost. Nobody said, that's so much money, we can't do it. This major infrastructure bill that will change everything, make life better for millions, tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions of Americans, is $350 billion a year. To do stuff on our behalf for us that will benefit us directly, each and every one of us, where that's $350 billion a year. To $740 billion a year for the military To do what? To bomb people on the other side of the world? We need to show the hypocrisy. We need to say, wait a minute, we're spending this much money and nobody blinks. Nobody thinks twice about it. They have no problem with who's gonna pay for it or any of that. Why is it only when we're trying to do good for the American people, for the taxpayers, for the people who are paying this money, it's our money, that's what they have a problem with? I'm tired of making concessions to them. They want to go blow up the world, fine. Do it on your bucks, not on mine. And by the way, we're out of Afghanistan now. Where are all those savings going? Give it to us and put it into this program.
Well, I'm sorry to say that I go out and I register voters and I canvass for, you know, campaigns.
Uh-huh.
And I talk to a lot of the public. And I'm sorry to say that the American public is just not well informed. They are, I guess, busy living their lives trying to stress a living.
Because then they also have a media.
Have the knowledge that you and I
know.
May have.
Well, that's why we need
and
to educate them.
The thing that I believe will make a difference is if these programs are in place and people feel them. They don't have to read about them. They don't have to hear about them on the media. They feel them. For example, the dental, the section about expanding Medicare
yeah.
in this reconciliation
yeah.
package will not take place. They've got it written so it takes place in 2028.
Yeah.
That will not be felt in time for the election. But
I agree.
People, if these get front-loaded, put in place, people will feel them. And people will vote based on what they're feeling in their lives.
Well,
and one last thing
yeah.
before I go.
Uh-huh.
And please don't be offended.
No.
And I think, okay, when you talk about conservatives,
yes.
that's very polite. I think of them as corporate whores.
Okay, well, I like
that
too. That
expression.
I like that too. Corporate whores, obstructionists, anything but they're not moderate. And they're not centrist.
No. They're selling their vote for the highest dollar. And Kristen Sinema,
oh,
I know, does not care about her political reputation anymore. She is looking to become a lobbyist with a high salary for the, you know, the corporations. She's sold out. She's over. She knows she's not going to, you know, be in the Senate next year. But she doesn't care. She's
well,
for the money. That's my.
I hear you. And Lynn,
that's what I've heard.
Lynn, I'm going to burst.
So anyway, thank you.
You got it. Thank you for calling. I'm going to burst your bubble now and everybody else's bubble because I have breaking
okay.
news from Sam Stein at Politico, who just tweeted out new Biden opposes changing Senate rules to make raising the debt limit filibuster proof. What the fuck?
Wow.
This is the kind of thing that really pisses me off, in case you couldn't tell. I just don't get it.
Awesome.
Right. What
yeah,
the hell?
I don't either.
All right.
We're screwed. Okay. Anyway,
we are screwed. Thank you, Lynn.
Thank you for the show.
Oh, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for calling. Thanks for listening. David, you had another comment?
I stand corrected.
Okay. You stand corrected?
They adopted a resolution.
Oh, they adopted a resolution criticizing her. The next step is the vote of no, which is what I thought. There, it was a threat. Do this and we will have that vote of no confidence. See, sometimes he corrects me and I'm already right. Anyway, before before we run out of time. So the website I was going to tell you about when we're talking about the vaccine and the idiots who refuse to take it. And I'm doing my own research. Well, check this out. There is a website called Sorry Antivaxxer.com. That would be sorry, S-O-R-R-Y, antivaxxer, antivaxxer.com. And when you get there, it's just people submit their stories. The purpose of this site is educational, it says. Everyone listed on this site helped spread COVID-19 misinformation and then paid the price for their views. Share to stop others from making the same mistake. And there's a place where you can contribute your anti-vaxxer story. But when I go there, oh, I should have put it on the other. Hold on. I'm going to see if I can't bring it up really fast on the other screen so I can bring it up on, sorry, anti-vaxxer. So I can bring it up on the videofeed.com so you could see what I'm talking about. It is amazing. So here's the site. It says sorryantivaxxer.com. And when you go there, you scroll down. There's where you can contribute your anti-vaxxer story. And then it's just one after another, pictures and descriptions. So the first one, Vax Man, 8 hours ago. Update, Lewis Ed Ewing, 59 of Tacoma, Washington, pro se litigator in ICU with COVID, in quotation marks, against his will. Update today, Lewis' family have taken over his hospitalization and they're keeping the activists who are trying to save Lewis, out of his, you can read that one yourself. Let's go to the next one. Okay, Adam Fry, 38, Butler, Pennsylvania, transit worker, anti-vaxxer, dead from COVID. Sister says, get vaccinated. Ben Garrison, 63, Lakeside, Montana, cartoonist, anti-vaxxer, has COVID, won't go to hospital. You can Google him. According to tons of stories today, just Google him. He's caught COVID and has decided to ride it out alone at home. Ron Skippa, 52 of Dallas, author, evangelical flat earther, anti-vaxxer, on ventilator with COVID. And it goes on and on and on and on and on and on. So share your own anti-vaxxer stories. Okay. See you tomorrow. Thanks for listening, everyone. Okay. I'm actually not done. I just needed to end for Progressive Voices, although I think they're still with us. Our clocks are not synced up, so there's not a clean in and out. But I'm going to keep going for a few minutes because I got another caller from this area, the 954 area code on the line, and I want to hear from you. Hi, who's this?
This is Casey. How you doing, Nicole?
I'm good. How are you? Where are you?
Good. It's been a long time. I'm actually in West Palm.
Okay.
But I used to live in Fort Lauderdale
gotcha.
For 17 years.
Casey, so what did you think of Charlie Crist? Did you hear Nikki Fried last week?
He's an opportunist,
well,
plain and simple.
Yeah.
And he's all about opportunity. The only thing he can do is fundraise. And the problem is he lost against Charlie Crist, which is a, I'm sorry.
He is Charlie Crist. He lost against Rick Scott.
Which is He lost against Rick Scott.
But hold on. But it was in 2010, at the height of the teabagger nonsense. And I'm not saying that he can't lose again. And that concerns me, too. He's like a perennial runner. And as I said to someone in the chat room before the show started, he's always running for something. And it seems like he always wants the next bigger job. Right?
And his gay issue, he went out with I have a couple gay friends, and he dated one of my gay friends.
Yeah.
I was at the party where he was at.
I really hoped he would have said, you know, it shouldn't make a difference, but yeah, whatever. I live my life, you live your life. But instead he said, well, I'm not, but you know.
But the thing is, though, he's still not being honest. That's the thing. He's
right.
an opportunist. And the Democratic Party needs to part ways with him. Why are we? This is we've been under Republican rule for almost two decades. I mean, how much more can Florida take? And this is the we're going to gamble with Charlie Crist. I'm sorry, he has no base whatsoever. The only thing he can do is fundraise. He is good at that. He's good at fundraising. You don't have to apologize, Casey.
I get it. And this is exactly what I was feeling going into the interview. I was impressed with him because I've got a pretty good bullshit detector, but he's a politician. And so that's built in. They all have that, you know, bullshit avoidance tech, most of them anyway. I don't know what worries me too. The fact that he was that's why I started out with that question. What has he changed on? And apparently he's changed on a lot of things. And again, having been paying attention when he was governor the first time, he was not the same kind of Republican as these kind of Republicans. My biggest problem with him, seriously, was his total disregard for the LGBTQ community, for their rights, for everything, knowing that, he can sleep with whoever the fuck he wants. I don't care. I hate the disingenuity of it or the lies, however you want to put it. I'm trying to be diplomatic here.
Well, look at Gilliam. I mean, Gilliam lost. When is the Democratic Party going to get it together? It's like, it's almost like we're on the 2-yard line with a first down and we still can't score. It's like, I mean, how many? And Florida is a swing state. We got to reverse course on this. And let me tell you something, the conservative, the right wing, the MAGAs, the Tea Party, whatever you want to call them, They are engaged. They are not. They're not going to sit down. They are not going quietly. It doesn't matter facts or whatever.
I know.
They want their white nationalist utopia back.
I hear you.
It matters to them.
But let me ask you this. Let me ask you this, Casey. Did you hear Nikki Fried? And I'm asking, look, I was impressed with her, too. I liked her more than I thought I would after talking to her. Knowing, seeing her over the last 4 years as agriculture commissioner, I've not been impressed. And she's got no background. Yes, she's a lawyer. But what else? This is the first government job she's had. I don't think that qualifies her to be governor. At least he's had the job. And we know he was competent, even if he was a Republican. And he wasn't a horrible Republican. He wasn't in the same class as DeSantis or Scott. And I'm not, look, I'm going back and forth. I have no idea who I'm going to vote for. And then there's Annette Tadeo, who may jump in. And I've got my issues with her, too. I mean, there are things about her I love, but, you know, she doesn't have any name recognition. So, you know, I wish we had a slam dunk candidate who could put Ron DeSantis where he belongs, but I don't think we do.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. How do we hold, again, you know, I didn't want Biden, but it was what we needed
exactly.
to do or whatever, yep. because I like Tulsi Gabbard.
Oh,
like
God. Tulsi. Really? Did you see what she's doing now? See, you just went down about 10 notches in my book, Casey. What did you like about Tulsi Gabbard?
Tulsi holds both town. I do not toe the line. The Democratic Party needs to be held accountable for they're not squeaky clean. They are in bed with Wall Street just as much
True.
As the Republican
I agree.
Party. They're in bed
but
with
she's
the Democratic
Party. But she's hanging out with the Foxies.
They need to be held accountable, too. I'm sorry. I'm not going to toe the line. I'm a proud independent that's
Good.
Always voted for the Democrats, but the Democratic Party is their own worst enemy.
I agree. Look, just what I just said about Joe Biden, saying that he's not for getting rid of the filibuster to ensure that these bills get through. No, you got to get rid of the filibuster. This is what I don't get. He's shooting himself in the foot. So,
I hear the whole thing about Afghanistan, he did his best job he can do. There's no president
I agree.
Could have done anything better
I
than
agree.
He did. It was a failed war. We lost that war. That was a lost
yep.
war.
I don't criticize him for Afghanistan at all.
No.
I criticize Trump. I criticize Biden. I criticize Bush. Obama. I criticize Bush. I don't criticize Joe Biden. He got us out of there.
But if the Democratic Party, if the Democrats lose the next election in the midterms, they only have them blame themselves.
That's
I'm sorry.
True.
We've had a
but,
winning lottery
Casey.
Ticket again, another winning lottery ticket. And he's had an opportunity like I said, you're right with the filibuster. And I don't know if he's going to wait till last minute, but he's playing Russian roulette right now. And
I
I'm
hear
not
you.
Happy about it. He needs to get off.
I agree with everything you said, except Tulsi Gabbard. She's fucking nuts. My opinion,
yeah,
you're entitled to yours. That's mine. I just call him the way I see him.
Listen, Nicole, I respect you. I haven't talked to you. It's been probably about 2 years since I talked to you on your show. And listen, I appreciate the hard work you do. It's a thankless job. And, you know, you're keeping, you know, the base engaged. But it comes down to, I'm tired of holding my nose to the left of the evils. And unfortunately, that the MAGA movement is, I wish, why can't the Democratic Party get engaged like these crazy MAGAs?
We did.
Seriously.
We did with Bernie Sanders. But we had instead, you had James Clyburn coordinating with the other Amy Klobuchar and Mayo Pete to get him out of the race. If they kept their nose out of it, I believe we would have had Bernie Sanders. But, who knows? Who knows? Then again,
well, listen. You have a safe rest of the end of your summer into the fall, and I love you. And we gotta stay calm. But the same thing too, we can't take things for granted.
I hear you.
We need to stay engaged, and that's one of the things. Like all these MAGAs, I don't troll them anymore, but they are in their little basements with their tidy whities selling their little MAGA t-shirts and, whether it's DeSantis or Trump, with 2,000 followers. At least they're engaged. It doesn't matter if they're right or wrong.
Right.
They're unified. That's the biggest thing.
I hear you. But see, that's the thing. We're not. And I'm not saying that as a bad thing. We don't take our marching orders. Look, I've been in media for many, many years. I've never gotten a set of talking points from the Democratic Party. And if I did, I would have crumpled it up and tossed it in the trash where it belongs. Because we don't do that. We think for ourselves. They don't. That's why you can flip from channel to channel and hear them saying the exact same words, because they all read the same talking points and they take their marching orders. And that's the beginning of fascism.
I don't know what it is. I'm on the phone.
In fact, Casey, I'm going to let you go because we have someone from the 831 area code that I already brought in because I didn't want to lose you. Thank you, Casey. You too. Hi, who's this?
It's Joy.
Hey, Joy. Oh, it's Joy. Hi, Joy. Long time.
Yeah, long time. I just wanted to say, you know, I was fairly impressed with Charlie.
Uh-huh.
And I think that he might have come around and he might have gotten, I don't know, a little bit of enlightenment. Maybe the whole thing with Obama really did change his perspective.
Well, that hug, I got to tell you, in Florida, it was like a sonic boom. Like, he hugged him. Here's the picture again. I'll put it up again. This was the hug heard round the state. This killed Charlie Crist's career as the Republican governor. It was that moment. So, I can see that would change you. I still have a problem with what I perceive as his hypocrisy on who he is and what he stood for back then. And I get people can change. I just wish he, you know, look, what he does in his own time, again, is his own thing. But before he ran for Congress in 2014, he got married. Now, he had been, I guess, married when he was much younger and divorced. And he was, you know, a bachelor. And there are all these rumors flying around him and some pretty in-depth, detailed stories that sound too detailed to be rumors. And again, I don't care. What I have a problem with is the hypocrisy and his lack of compassion for and help for the gay community. And so he got married before his run for Congress in 2014. His wife, Carol, she was there by his side. Well, gee, I just looked and they quietly got divorced in 2017. Maybe, and that's fine. I just don't know why he feels like he has to hide it. And like someone, I guess it was Casey, who said he knows people who've been to parties with him. I've heard those stories too. I've heard firsthand stories. So normally I wouldn't harp on this, and I hate that I am because I think it makes me sound really shitty. But it's the hypocrisy that bothers me.
I understand your point. I just think that, well, as long as he's coming around now to supporting gay marriage and stuff,
yep.
However it happens, he might just not be comfortable with coming out.
I guess.
You know?
I guess. And he's not acting in...
In general, I got a feeling, yes, and you said he's a politician and they're good at this kind of thing. But in general, I got a sense of genuineness from you, from him.
I did,
and
too.
And you did a great interview with him.
Thank you. Yeah, I thought it was really good too, and I liked him. And I'm a tough customer. I don't like people generally. I'm not an easy sell. I am a really tough audience, whether it's music, politicians, movies, whatever. I'm tough. I'm not an easy person. And I enjoyed that. I liked him, and I am coming around to that. If he's the nominee, yeah, I'll vote for him. And again, I don't know who I'm going to vote for in the primary yet. Right now, it's between him and Nikki Fried because they're the only two running. That will change. Primary's still a year off, so who knows?
Well, I'm going to call his office tomorrow and tell him I appreciated the interview that he gave with you.
Okay, cool. Thank you. Thanks, Joy.
Good.
Good. Thank you, Joy. Joy, you still up in the Santa Cruz area?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
Okay, Joy goes
here.
You go. Joy goes way back to the Air America days with me. You've been around for a long time.
Yep.
Yep.
Sure have.
Well, thank you for being here.
I love you.
Thank you. Love you too. It's good to talk to you. Bye bye.
Right,
someone in the chat room said, "Now Alan Grayson's divorced too." But that has nothing to do with this. Alan Grayson one was never actively working against gay rights, or denying stories that have circulated around the state for a decade. I'm not the biggest Alan Grayson fan. I used to be. We used to be friends. But we had a falling out. He kind of blamed me for trouble that he got in when he came on the air with me from his congressional office doing a campaign call, which they're not allowed to do. Now, I didn't do that. He did that. But while he was on the air with me, you could hear the call for a vote that comes over the loudspeaker. Some blogger or journalist was listening and called him out on it, and he blamed me for some reason and then got mad at me because I called him out on supporting Hillary Clinton. See, it was the 2012. God, I'm getting old and the dates are all mushing together. I think it was 2012. It was the 2012, like this is going way back. And he, it was Hillary Clinton. Was it 2012 or 2008? I'm getting all confused now. But there was a thing when he, it was 2012. It was Hillary Clinton, Bernie Sanders, 2012, right? God, I'm all mixed up. Anyway, it was when it was between Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders. Forget whatever year it was. And Alan Grayson's the great progressive, right? And all of a sudden, I read in the paper that he signed on to Hillary Clinton's Florida advisory panel. It's like, what the fuck is this? Alan Grayson? And I called him on it and I said, so you're endorsing Hillary Clinton? Well, I didn't say I was endorsing her, but you signed on to her advisory board. Obviously, you're endorsing her. He got mad at me. And it basically blamed me for him losing. So we're not friends anymore. It's too bad. Howie Klein loves him, still thinks he's great. I can tell you this. Alan Grayson has burned so many bridges. I'm not the only person that he had a falling out with. I know people who worked for him in his office, one of whom is a Democratic Party, progressive Democratic Party staffer, campaign chief. You know, he's a guy who's done a lot of campaigns. And he said, if you are in Alan Grayson's camp, if you're supporting him, don't talk to me anymore. I don't know what happened. I just know that he was so disgusted by his experience working for Alan Grayson, I think running his campaign, that he quit midstream and said, do not ever talk to me about Alan Grayson again. I would like to know the details because I'm nosy and I'm curious. I've heard that from too many progressive Florida activists. He does not have a base here. He's running for Senate. And as much as I'd rather see Alan Grayson in the Senate than Val Demings, he doesn't stand a shot against her. Howie Klein will disagree with me, but we disagree on a number of things, including, you know, the California recall election. So, yes, Joy, your call was great. All right. So, anyway, yeah, and somebody, Diane, wow, I didn't know Nicole has so much power. I don't. I do this little show. And it is a little show. For as long as I've been doing this, I'm an acquired taste, obviously. And some people don't take the time to acquire the taste. So I got to thank you, all of you who stick with me and hang here every day and contribute to the program. I can't thank you enough because I am not mass appeal. And that's okay. I just, you know, I wish I had more money coming in, but I wouldn't trade. Well, I would trade what I'm doing for other things. I'd trade it for a bigger paycheck, but I wouldn't sell out my principles. So anyway, share the show with a friend that you think might appreciate it. Our numbers, our downloads, our views on YouTube are anemic compared to many of my colleagues. I don't know. Maybe I'm just not likable, but I know I'll always tell you the truth. I'll always be honest with you. I'll always tell you what I think, and I will give you the opportunity to say what you think as well. We may disagree. I can tell you you're full of shit, but I'll still give you the opportunity to say whatever you want to say. All right. With that, we're done. Tomorrow, again, we have Zach Carter, who's awesome. Thursday, Howie Klein will be here. Probably won't get into it about Alan Grayson because he knows of our falling out and we just don't we don't go there. On Friday, David Dayen will be here to kind of wrap this week up, because I knew this is going to be hell week in Congress with the biff and the infrastructure and the reconciliation and the fighting and the Pelosi and Schumer and Biden. Oh, my. So David Dayen will be here Friday to help us pull it all together. And on Friday, I'm also guest hosting the broadcast. And I already planned I'm going to run back to back the Nikki Fried interview and the Charlie Crist interview. So if you want to hear them back to back, it'll be on the broadcast on Friday. I'll remind you of it then. Okay. All right. With that, I'll say I'll see you tomorrow, and I'll leave you with the news. Thanks for listening, everyone. Have a great night. Bye.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Like a very high-stakes game of chicken, the Senate on Monday rejected two bills. First, the Republicans en masse voted against a continuing resolution that would fund the government until December and extend the debt ceiling until December of 2022. The vote was 48 to 50. More on that in a moment. Then the Democrats voted down a Republican effort to fund the government until December, but without the increase in the debt limit. Following that stalemate, Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer spoke from the floor.
I want to make sure everyone understands exactly what has happened here on the Senate floor. The Republican Party has now become the party of default, the party that says America doesn't pay its debts. Our country is staring down the barrel of two totally Republican-manufactured disasters, a government shutdown and a first-ever default on the national debt. The impact of both would gravely harm every single American in this country.
But, and this is a big but, the Democrats' strategy appears to have changed overnight. Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi told her members Monday night that she is moving forward on a standalone vote on the BIF, the hard infrastructure bill, and will not wait for the larger Build Back Better reconciliation package to pass. A quick aside, why aren't there better, catchier names for these two bills? Once again, Democrats lose on messaging alone. But it may not only be Pelosi. Apparently, Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer also agrees. The previous position as of yesterday was that one should not and cannot pass without the other. But Pelosi believes she doesn't have any choice but to hold the BIF vote on Thursday, both because she promised the corporate Dems and because the highway and transit programs expire on Thursday. Now, progressives are skeptical of the need to act on transportation programs by that deadline, and they believe they were tricked. Progressives keep referring to the original deal that infrastructure would move in tandem with the other larger bill. So that's the impasse. A big problem is, well, actually twofold, Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema. And talks with them reportedly have barely begun. House Democratic Caucus Chair Hakeem Jeffries said, what's holding everything up are a few senators who aren't providing us with any clarity as to where they ultimately will land. Lovely. Now, about that 48 to 50 vote, two senators were absent, Republican Ben Sasse and Democrat Dianne Feinstein. Chuck Schumer voted no. That's a procedural move that'll allow him to bring the bill back for a vote at a later time. Dianne Feinstein did return from the August recess, but hasn't been present since September 23rd, missing a number of votes. Her office, in response to an inquiry, said she's out due to a family medical emergency and that she'll return to Washington, quote, as soon as possible. At 88, Feinstein is the oldest member of the U.S. Senate. Just saying. Meanwhile, California Governor Gavin Newsom signed a new law requiring that election officials send a mail-in ballot to every registered voter in the state. This makes California the eighth state to make universal mail-in ballots permanent. Moving right along, the Biden administration on Monday proposed a new rule seeking to restore a program providing protection against deportation for hundreds of thousands of Dreamers brought to the United States without documentation when they were children. A federal judge in Houston ruled in July that the Obama-era DACA program was illegal, largely due to procedural shortcuts taken by that administration. The Biden administration's rule recreates the 2012 policy, but goes through the federal regulatory process to make sure it's all legal. Well, President Biden got his COVID-19 booster shot on Monday, while a vaccine mandate went into effect in New York for all healthcare workers. So hospitals and nursing homes are now bracing for staff shortages, not only in New York, but California. Some administrators fear some employees will quit or face dismissal or suspension rather than get the shots. Incredible. New York's Governor Kathy Hochul said she'd bring in National Guard members to fill in for any who refuse to comply with a vaccine mandate. The military leaders who oversaw the United States exit from Afghanistan head to Capitol Hill for 2 days of questioning. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin, Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Mark Milley, and General Kenneth McKenzie, the commander of U.S. Central Command, appear in back-to-back hearings with the Senate and House Armed Services Committees. This marks for the first time the Pentagon's top decision makers facing lawmakers publicly since the withdrawal concluded last month. And finally, a federal jury in New York on Monday found R&B singer R. Kelly guilty of racketeering conspiracy and sex trafficking charges. Prosecutors said Kelly used agents, bodyguards, and others to lure and trap girls, young women, and occasionally men, that he then sexually abused. Kelly was also convicted of violating the Mann Act, which bars travel over state lines for illegal sex. So he was convicted on September 27th. He'll be sentenced in May? Don't know why the delay, but he faces 10 years to life in prison. So I guess there's no hurry. I got the news. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is fully listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on that donate button.